Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fence side.
It ain't the left. Thank you, Solo D. Welcome to another episode of On the Fence Side here with Kat and Paul. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Spreaker, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Check out our merch store on thefenside.threadless.com. I'm Brian Kat, NFL. Paul is Fanatic underscore pick. That's PHINATIC underscore pick on Twitter. We are back. It's been 2 months since our last show, and we do that by design. We don't want to just pump out shows for the sake of doing them in the off season. We want to make sure they're packed with analysis and with content in a way that's easily digestible for you. But it has been kind of a crazy summer here. I have a new son, actually my first son. So I've been spending a lot of time with him. We've got our newest Dolphins fan here. His name is Drew. And so life has been pretty interesting here, Paul. How's your summer been so far?
Good. Busy as all get out. I can't wait. I'm actually going to get away for vacation within 24 hours of putting this up. But yeah, dude, it's, you know, you know Kat's a big football fan when he's naming his kid after Drew Rosenhaus. I mean,
yeah, we'll go.
Well, I hope
that
it wasn't Bledsoe. I mean, Jesus.
Bledsoe. Actually, I think we always like the name Drew, and I think that where it comes from is my wife and her whole family are big Mizzou fans. I think Drew Locke at a certain point crept into her head on that, and I always liked the name Drew, so that's what we went with. But we'll see if he ends up being a Chiefs fan or a Dolphins fan, because my wife's a Chiefs fan. So we will take a look, and we'll keep you updated here. Something else I do.
If he gets your jersey curse, I hope he's a Chiefs fan, just so you know.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting him a little Tua jersey to see.
Oh,
if
Jesus. You're not allowed to spend money on a jersey. I don't know where the curse extends to. You're just not allowed. I'm going to message her and make sure that that doesn't happen.
It's a pretty high risk, high reward, because if Tua turns out to be a great quarterback and we've got the onesie, maybe we're kind of turning this franchise around a little bit here at the Catanzaro house. So, but Paul, as far as anything else we do in the off season. As far as football, one thing I try to do is I have this little drill where I memorize all the depth charts, all 32 teams. I read as much as I can, and then I try in July or in August to go for a walk or run on the treadmill every day and try to memorize the depth charts for each team. Usually I get about 45 out of the 53 right on each team. So that's just a little something I do. So we are still pounding away here in the off season. But one thing we're going to do here today is we're going to talk about
I got to jump in there, because to be fair, I just want to let our listeners know one of the things I do and a drill that I do in the off season is I let Kat memorize all the depth charts. So we're covered there, just so you know.
Good enough. All right. So one thing we're going to do here today is, and why we're having the show here today is, we're going to take a look position by position at the training camp battles going on here starting at the end of July. So we've got rookie training camp scheduled at the time of this recording for July 21st. We have the full team reporting on July 28th. We still have to take a look and see how training camp is going to go with the coronavirus pandemic going on. But as it appears now, it looks like training camp's going to go on as scheduled. There are going to be a lot of precautions being taken that the Dolphins rolled out this week. And then as we get into the season, might be one unlike any other. So, Paul, starting at the quarterback spot, I mean, I have a tough time with this, because I don't think it's actually going to be a competition with how the offseason is slated to look right now. Ryan Fitzpatrick is coming off a great finish to the 2019 season. You know, the Dolphins in the last two games, you know, they scored 38 against the Bengals. They scored 27 against the Patriots. They just look unstoppable. And this year they have a new offensive coordinator in Chan Gailey. So you've got a new offensive system. You've got Tua Tagovailoa, who is the fifth overall pick in the draft. He's also got the hip as well. And you've got Josh Rosen in the mix. But, you know, I don't see it being a competition for the starting job, at least at the outset, because of the shortened offseason, because of all the variables in place.
I'm going to throw that down as a maybe. And some of that has to do with the variables. It's, you know, if Flores and company believe that the season's going to end up being shortened due to the coronavirus, I could see a scenario where it's they almost treat what they think is going to be a shortened season. Because if the season gets shortened due to the coronavirus, it's going to be horrific. We're all going to hate that. But at the end of the day, that may be a scenario where we don't have playoffs. We don't have a Super Bowl. I hope that that's not the case. But if Flores believes that that is going to end up being the case, I think you throw Tua out on that field and say, screw it, and treat it as an extended preseason in that case. And just get him some game reps in a situation that truly does not matter. And on top of that, we've got a couple other factors that we've got to consider here. Yeah, maybe from the outset, but I love Ryan Fitzpatrick. When he's good, he is so good. But when he's not, he is so not. And he over the bigger, broader data set of his career, has not been a model of consistency. We've talked about that. We've talked about the fact that when he's on, he's one of the best. When he's off, he's one of the worst. And given that fact, given that he had a good season last year down the stretch, there's still the possibility that he turns back into Ryan Fitzpatrick. And you've also got to factor in, you know, there was a lot of speculative rumors about the Dolphins trying to move Rosen as soon as they drafted Tua. It hasn't happened.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things there is I agree with you in theory, but I think that I don't think the season is going to be shortened. And if it is, there's no way to know that at the outset of that. We're not going to know in August, okay, that we're only going to play till October. So I don't think you can make decisions based on that. And as far as the competition that goes here, and when you factor into his health, maybe the real competition is going to be for the backup spot between Tua and Josh Rosen. So we'll see. I agree with you on Fitzpatrick that not only is he inconsistent, to me the real inconsistency is year to year. Because we've seen with Fitzpatrick that, you know, you take a look at that Jets season, I think it was in 2015 where he had a great year, and then they waited for him to come back, and then he did come back and he had a horrific season. With the Bucs, he starts out in the first 3 or 4 weeks being great, and then he just completely falls off a cliff. So Fitzpatrick was having a good time last year, but he can be a little bit volatile from 1 year to the next.
No, I completely agree. And it should be interesting because each of these three has some form of question marks heading into the training camp. And it'll be interesting to see. I think Fitzpatrick does start right out of the gate. But at the same time, I can see a scenario for each of the other two, depending upon so many factors that are really not necessarily football factors for some of it.
Yeah. Let's look at the running back spot. And by the way, we're also going to say our, you know, what Paul and I have agreed on is really the roster locks right now. We're not going to say 100%, but we will say that 90-95% chance of making the team here. Because that's where the other battles come into play. So at quarterback, we've got all three making the roster very handily. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Tua Tagovailoa, and Josh Rosen. There's a chance, you know, maybe at the end of camp, if some quarterbacks go down or the coronavirus does come into play, that Josh Rosen could possibly be traded at a certain point. I don't know what you're going to get for him. At this point, you may not get more than a late rounder for him, which at which point we are heavily in favor on the show of keeping him this year. At the running back spot, Paul, you know, I don't know for the starting job if it's even a competition either, because you've got Jordan Howard, who played for Philadelphia last year and had back-to-back great seasons to start his career with the Chicago Bears. He's slated to be the starter right now. They also traded a fifth-round pick on draft day for Matt Breida, who had varying success there with San Francisco. But I think either way, we're looking at a split at the running back spot as far as carries and touches, at least to start the season.
I do too, and I wouldn't be shocked if we see a number of scenarios and packages where Chan Gailey trots them both out there. And, you know, you can flex Braid out to a wide receiver spot and mask some of your packages with them out there. So it would be very, very interesting to see how the splits truly come down. I mean, they're two very different running backs, and you can do some exciting things with each of them. I think Braid is by far the better receiver, which you need to be in Gailey's offense as well. So I'm intrigued to see how it shakes out. I'm a big Breda fan, but again, we've only got him on a one-year contract, and this is a team playing for the future. So got to see what we get out of the guy.
Yeah, and, you know, Jordan Howard, his biggest skill is consistency and pass blocking. So and that really lends itself to being able to play on earlier downs, because you're not going 3, 4, 5 wide as well. 5 wide, you wouldn't have a running back on the field, but 3 or 4 wide there, where Matt Breida is more of the of the fast running back. I didn't know this when the Dolphins traded for him, but when he was undrafted out of Georgia Southern here a few years ago, he ran a 4.38 and he had a 42-inch vertical leap. So the guy can clearly move. He can make plays in space. And his receiving grade by PFF was actually higher than Christian McCaffrey's. I'm not saying he's better than McCaffrey. I'm not saying he'll catch 4 passes, but he's highly thought of in the passing game as a receiver. And if you've got Tua and you've got Ryan Fitzpatrick mainly that can dump the ball off, get him into space, I looks like that's going to be a good fit for what the Dolphins are trying to do in the passing game with running backs. But Paul, the more intense battle at running back may be for that third or fourth spot.
I agree. And one of the things that I keep looking at is I think they're going to end up stashing Malcolm Perry over at the running back position, or at least putting him in the mix over there. Malcolm Perry is one of those weird ones that he doesn't have a true position on offense, but he's one of those Flores quote unquote football players that you can get out on the field and do some creative things with. That said, I mean, if they keep 3, I don't see Perry being listed over there, but I can see a scenario where they keep 4. And then you've got Gaskin and Laird battling each other for that other running back spot. And there are things to like about each. I, you know, and our listeners know I was a fan of Gaskin's coming out, but I was also impressed with what Laird did last season. I think Gaskins would get the nod, though, because I think he's got the higher upside and can do a little bit more from that running back position than Laird, even though Laird's probably the better receiver.
Yeah, and Laird, his skill is catching the football, and that may be replaced by Matt Breida on this team. And so you've got really – If you count Malcolm Perry as a running back, you know, we've seen him count. He's listed at running back, but he wears number 10. So he could go either way. So he'll be interesting to watch there in camp, but let's count him at running back. You've got really a battle for 1 or 2 spots between Miles Gaskin, Patrick Laird, Kalen Ballage, as well as Malcolm Perry. I mean, we'll see if Kalen Ballage bounces back. I think he's kind of too far gone at this point. And he's not a great blocker. He's not a great receiver, which you kind of need to be in Chan Gailey's offense. So, yeah, right now we've got the 2 roster locks as Jordan Howard and Matt Breida, and then 1 or 2 other running backs fighting to make the team. At wide receiver, we've got four locks right now. We've got Devontae Parker coming off a great year, Preston Williams. Albert Wilson has had a contract renegotiation where he'll make $4 million this year, so he's got to be a lock. Jakeem Grant re-signed to a four-year, $23 million extension last year, so he's going to be on the team as a returner and somebody that we remain excited about. This has got to be the year if it's going to be it, though. Given that Chan Gailey likes to use a lot of wide receivers, nobody uses three and four wide receiver packages more than Chan Gailey. You may see five, six, or seven wide receivers make the roster. So you're going to have a real big battle here. This is going to be fun to watch between the likes of Allen Hurns, Isaiah Ford, who came on late, Mac Hollins, who the Dolphins got late in the year, Gary Jennings, a fourth-round pick of the Seahawks in 2019, Ricardo Lewis, who caught a deep pass against the Dolphins here a couple of years ago with the Browns, and undrafted free agents, Matt Cole and Kirk Merritt. So, Paul, a lot of interesting battles here. I would say at this point, it would be a pretty big disappointment if Allen Hurns turned out to be the guy that made the roster. It probably would have meant that some of these younger players didn't step up.
It would be a disappointment, and I think there's two different competitions here when you look at the fifth and sixth wide receiver spots. The fifth wide receiver spot's probably going to end up going to the best wide receiver out of the mix, but then that sixth spot may be the one that's a little bit more active on game days. When you look at the two undrafted free agents in particular for that sixth spot, the fifth spot I hope goes to either Ford or Jennings, but for that sixth spot, I think it's going to come down to Merritt or Cole because they've got a lot of special teams value. And you can see from some of the pickups that the Dolphins made this offseason how big they are on special teams value. You look at guys like Clayton Fedelin and others. It's they really put an emphasis on special teams this offseason. And I mean, they even used a draft pick for a long snapper in Blake. So, yeah, I think it's going to come down to Merritt or Cole for the sixth spot. But for that fifth spot, you're probably eyeballing Ford and Jennings with a disappointing answer being Allen Hurts.
Yeah, when you look down the list, you see a lot of players who have one thing working for them. Allen Hurns is the veteran of the group. I mean, this is somebody who, 5 years ago, was an 1,100-yard receiver with Blake Bortles at quarterback. I mean, and then when – Here in the middle of the season, you know, he started to take off a little bit in that third receiver role after Albert Wilson, Preston Williams went down during the year. So you've got Allen Hurns with the veteran experience. You've got Isaiah Ford, who really came on down the stretch, but he doesn't play special teams. And then you've got Mac Hollins, who doesn't have a lot of experience at wide receiver, but is a very good special teamer. And then after that, Jennings, Lewis, Merritt, and Cole, kind of on the outside looking in right now, but have a lot of raw physical skills and can very easily leapfrog these guys. Looking at the tight end spot, Paul, really
Before we move on from the wide receiver position, one of the things that we've got to look at as well, and one of the reasons why Hurns would be a disappointment, is the fact that while this should be a drastically improved team this year, this is a team that you can see the way they're building the roster. You can see the way that they're looking at everything. And that's probably going to come into play, especially at the wide receiver spot, because they're building for the future. Flores is never going to not try to win now. I'm not saying that by any stretch. I think this is definitely a team that can challenge this season to begin with. But they're already stacked up for next year's draft. They're building that young core and that young nucleus. And that's where I see a scenario where the fact that Allen is that older, talented veteran in that room may work against him potentially, because if they see upside and they think the ceiling is higher for one of these guys than they do for some of the others, you may not see the best player win the position battle here, especially at wide receiver. You may see the one that they think long-term could really be the best player out of all of them, because they can sit him behind Devontae Parker. They can sit him behind Albert Wilson, Jakeem Grant, Preston Williams. So it's going to be interesting at this spot. This probably is going to be one of the most fun battles to watch.
Absolutely. It'll be one of the most fun battles. And, you know, to that is, yeah, I agree with you on Allen Hurns that could work against him. Because, you know, he is going to be, I believe, 29 this upcoming year. And if it's close between him and a younger guy, it could go to the younger guy. The flip side of that is, because this franchise is going to be linked to Tua Tagovailoa, you're going to see if Allen Hurns and his route running skills, if he's able to connect with Tua early and Tua wants him on the roster here, then I think Allen Hurns ends up staying. But again, you could end up seeing six or seven wide receivers on this roster based on both the depth of this position as well as many receivers as the Dolphins use on a down-to-down basis with Chan Gailey. So at the tight end spot, Paul, we've only got one sticking here, and that's Mike Gesicki. Other than that, you know, I flirted with the idea of having Durham Smythe as a lock too, but I've talked myself out of that. And so it looks like it's going to be, you know, the Dolphins should keep at least two tight ends, maybe three, because Chan Gailey doesn't use tight ends a lot. Mike Gesicki's going to be more of a big slot guy. So two or three tight ends are going to end up making the roster. You've got Durham Smythe against fullback Chandler Cox, tight end pickup Michael Roberts, practice squad player Chris Myrick, as well as a stack the undrafted free agent.
Yeah, and I like Smythe, and I can see scenarios where Chan Gailey will use the tight end. I really can. But at the same time, Smythe has not shown what we hoped he would out of the gate, and there's no reason that he should have a position cemented at this point in time. Miami had some big upgrades along the offensive line this offseason, so they may not have a quote-unquote need to have a tight end in to really truly help out very often as far as the blocking goes. And they seem to be big fans of Myrick from what I've heard and what I've seen. And on top of that, you've got Bryce Sterk, who he was a defensive end in college, hasn't played tight end since high school. And Miami, by all accounts, was on him for weeks leading up to the draft about how they really wanted to convert a defensive end into a tight end. For whatever reason, it sounds like it's a pet project. Sterk was a player I liked at defensive end, and he's an athlete. And I could see a scenario where they keep him on the roster to keep somebody from stealing him, not necessarily as a tight end for the stealing purposes, but because they're afraid somebody's going to try to steal him as a defensive end. He's a talented player, and he meets that pet project that it sounds like Flores and Greer have really wanted and talked about for a while.
Yeah, I think Durham Smythe is the odds-on favorite because he can immediately be that inline blocking tight end, and he's seen a lot of snaps in that role too. But I think kind of what you had said before about, you know, being a two-track competition at wide receiver, I think that's the case with tight end too. I think you're going to see Durham Smythe battling Michael Roberts, because Michael Roberts comes over after being released from Detroit and actually has three career touchdowns. Two of them were in one game against the Dolphins back in 2018. But he has a bigger, thicker inline blocker. So if he's better in that role, you might see Durham Smythe get pushed off this roster. And then you could have kind of that third developmental tight end type of role or competition there with Chris Myrick and Sterk. I think Myrick looked very good toward the end of camp last year. I actually thought he was going to make the 53-man roster. He ended up getting cut. We got him back on the practice squad, and we're lucky that nobody took him either. Chandler Cox, you know, he was a very good fit with Adam O'Shea's offense. Excuse me. I already forget his name. Chad O'Shea, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, Chad O'Shea.
You're thinking of Gase. It's that freaking PTSD about Gase, man.
No, I knew a dude named Adam O'Shea, and that's gonna already hate that guy because I've been saying Adam O'Shea for no, I'm just kidding, Adam. If you're listening, you're still a good guy. But yeah, Chad O'Shea's offense called for a fullback. It's that old Patriots style type of offense. Not the case with Jan Gailey. He doesn't use fullbacks. So Chandler Cox is going to have to show that he can be more of a tight end. And that's a possibility. He's got the size to do it. He's also has pretty good hands when he came out of Auburn too. But right now it's not looking very good there for Chandler Cox. So how do you see this this position finishing out here, Paul, at the tight end spot?
I'm going to take it kind of the route I said before. I think it's going to end up being Gesicki. I'm going to give my Eric the nod at the number two spot. And I'm going to give Sterk the nod as a developmental number three as we head into camp. And unfortunately, I think I'm going to see Smythe sliding off the roster. And one of the things you and I talked about a lot is for Chandler Cox, if Miami is going to use a fullback, you know, we've got a Landon Roberts. We've got Christian Wilkins that can slide in and have some fun out of that fullback role. We've got players that can, and at worst, you can take one of these tight ends and flex them like an H-back. So,
yeah, I think it's going to – we're going to see that in goal line situations and nothing else. I'm going to have Smythe making the roster and then the rest getting cut. I think you need to have one blocking guy, and I have him winning out over Roberts. Moving along at the offensive line, we have eight locks. We've got Austin Jackson at left tackle, Eric Flowers at left guard, Ted Karras at center, Jesse Davis either at right guard or right tackle, Robert Hunt, second round pick, or right guard or right tackle. Solomon Kindly, the fourth rounder out of Georgia, Michael Dieter, the third round pick last year from Wisconsin. And one I was a little torn on was Julian Davenport, but you know, it's so thin at swing tackle on this roster, and he's going to be competing from day one for the left tackle position. So I've got him pretty strongly on the roster too. So, but really, you know, it's more top heavy at this position, Paul, because in a year where you're not going to have as many opportunities and not as many preseason games, you've got two raw physical players at left tackle and right tackle, first round pick Austin Jackson and second round pick Robert Hunt, who have to win those jobs there. And they may not get enough snaps to do it. So at left tackle, you're going to have Austin Jackson against Julian Davenport. And at right tackle, you're going to have Robert Hunt against Jesse Davis, with possibly the loser sliding inside and starting at right guard.
See, I've got two raw physical players at the bookend tackles, and I've got a raw physical player at the right guard spot at this point. So it's we've got things shaped up a little differently, because I've got Kinley kind of winning the role, even if it's a situation where he ends up battling Jesse Davis at right guard, because I think, as I've said with other positions, they're going to play a little bit of the upside and take their lumps unless Jesse Davis absolutely blows Kinley out of the water. And this team seems to be looking for big physical mauling type players. Dieter, I've got him battling with Danelle Stanley and Ted Karras for that center spot. I like Ted Karras, but again, it does speak volumes to me that they only got him in here on a one-year contract. With that being the case, it seems like they're looking at somebody as more of a transitional, in case of emergency, break glass type of player.
Yeah, I'll take that a few different ways. I hope you're right on that, where Austin Jackson starting at left tackle, Robert Hunt starting at right tackle, and Solomon Kindly starting at right guard from the outset. The caveat to that is two things need to happen. Number one, either they all need to be really good right away, or number two, if they're not good, you better have Ryan Fitzpatrick starting for a while. Because what I don't want to see is you've got a really bad offensive line and you've got Tua back there now. This line needs to be at least not one of the worst in the league. And that's where PFF ranked them by far. And I agree with them heading into this season. This is a problem spot, but mostly it's because we have so many young players and so many unknowns. So I have Julian Davenport winning that left tackle job at the beginning. I've got Robert Hunt winning the right tackle spot. I think he's a little bit more ready to step in from day one. And I've got Jesse Davis winning the right guard spot. So we've got two different lineups there. So it will be interesting to see. But Michael Dieter is the fascinating one, because the Dolphins have prioritized size this offseason on the offensive line, not necessarily the versatility or the plug and play, that which was the reason they drafted Dieter last year. But Dieter also can play all three interior line spots. So you got to think that with where he was drafted last year and he could play center and guard, yeah, you've got – he would have to be pretty bad to be cut.
He would, and I don't think he's getting cut. I've got him as a lock to make this roster. It's hands down. I think he's got talent. I think, you know, he's going to be surrounded by some maulers. And I just have to say, how great is it that all this talk about who goes where and who slots where and who starts where, Ereck Flowers seems very cemented at that left guard spot.
Yeah, and in a pinch, he can slide over to left tackle. I'm not saying he'll be good at it, but
no.
If something terrible happens, let's say Austin Jackson and Julian Davenport both go down, or Jesse Davis, we want to keep on the right side. Then in that scenario, we possibly could. But yeah, what's nice is we have 42 roster locks here at this point. And last year, I think we were struggling to find 30 with how barren the cupboard was. So. Paul, let's look at the defensive side of the ball. Not as many competitions here, because the Dolphins signed four big-time free agents, Shaq Lawson and Emmanuel Ogba at the edge spots, Byron Jones at cornerback, Kyle Van Noy at linebacker. They also got some role players in Landon Roberts, Clayton Fedulum, and Kamu Grugier-Hill. So let's take a look there. At the edge spots, you're going to have, whether it's a 4-3 or a 3-4 look, you're going to have Ogba, Lawson, and Vince Beagle getting the majority of those snaps at edge. Then you kind of got an interesting competition there. I think both make the roster, and we've got both firmly on the roster, but to see who gets on the field between Andrew Van Ginkle and Curtis Weaver.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys that are going to be in the mix. Curtis Weaver already was a surprising slide to where he was at the draft. And you look at that, you look at the production we saw out of Weaver, and you look at the fact that he did all of that while fat and out of shape. And you and I both know, and having been in the locker room area, having been in the team cafeteria, how much of an emphasis teams put on getting their players in shape, getting their diets correct, getting all this stuff in play, where I'm curious where the ceiling is on a player like Curtis Weaver. If he's able to do that many talented things in a pretty good conference while fat and out of shape from a pass rush
perspective. Yeah, if PFF had him, and again, we reference PFF on the show, frankly, when we agree with them. And they had him as the 23rd overall player in the draft because he won so much as a pass rusher at Boise State. And he has some unpredictable moves for a big man. So just like Paul was saying, imagine if he ends up getting in shape to complement that. The flip side of that with Weaver is that he does not play special teams. And he has been out of shape. So if he doesn't come into camp and bust his butt, and I think he will, but if he doesn't, maybe he's not so much of a roster lock after all, because you may have Trent Harris, who dressed for every game last year, who was a former Patriot that Brian Flores thinks very highly of, that could end up taking that spot or at least be more of the active player on game day if Trent Harris makes the roster. So, but we've got Strobridge, we've got Curtis Weaver both making the roster, because it's really hard to be cut as a fifth-round pick.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Strobridge. He was a guy that I liked a lot, as was Curtis Weaver, and Van Ginkle's a guy I like a lot. And I think the more flexibility you see out of these players during training camp, the more likely they are to stick. Now, the one thing I'll say about Curtis Weaver being fat and out of shape, and, you know, God hope I don't get blocked for this, but whatever. Not going to lie to you. I can't see Flores being the type of coach that if Curtis Weaver doesn't get over his habits of being fat and out of shape, I can't see Flores being a coach that puts up with that. He is a no-nonsense type of guy when it comes to that type of stuff. And I can see him kicking his ass out the door if, you know, he walks into camp eating a couple of Egg McMuffins every day.
And I would hope that this front office and Brian Flores saw that, hey, we feel like we can get his diet correct and we're going to get this guy in shape. What I like about this front seven is with the addition of Raekwon Davis, and that's an interesting competition with him and Zach Sealer. Obviously, Raekwon's going to make the team as a second-round pick. Sealer was very impressive after being signed when the Ravens cut him last year. But that three-technique role is going to be big in this defense, and that's why they drafted Raekwon Davis. But if Sealer comes in and plays like he did in the last couple of games, maybe there's a spot for him on this roster too. Paul, at the defensive back spot, now you've got some very clear locks. You've got Byron Jones and Xavier Howard at the corner spots. You've got Noah Igbinoghene, first round pick, who'll obviously make the team. Same goes with third round pick Brandon Jones. Starting out camp at safety, you're going to have Bobby McCain. We'll get to that in a minute. And you're going to have Eric Rowe at the strong safety spot. So you've got six clear locks right there. I'd also say Nick Needham is the seventh guy who you've got to think is a lock unless he has a horrific camp. So we've got really two interesting battles here, if they are battles, is at free safety. If, you know, the Dolphins drafted Brandon Jones in the third round, they've got Clayton Fedulum, who didn't get a lot of snaps on defense with the Bengals, but when he did, he made the most of them. And they signed him to, you know, he's going to make over $3 million this year. So he's going to play some sort of role. And you've got Adrian Colbert, who played 240 plus snaps last year in the final four games, did a good job at the free safety position. So my hope on this, Paul, is that Bobby McCain gets knocked out of that free safety spot, ends up, goes back to nickelback. It'll allow the Dolphins to take more time with Noah Igbinoghene, who's only 20 years old right now. And you got to think Nick Needham gets on the field too as the sixth or seventh defensive back. So a lot of moving parts there in the secondary.
I think what's kind of cool here is the flexibility we've got with Bobby McCain. I think if Colbert is playing better, you know, whatever. It's Stephen Colbert there. We saw him in a Dolphins jersey on that and damn it. No, but if Adrian Colbert is playing better than Nick Needham throughout camp, I think you see a scenario where we see Jones, McCain, and Eric Rowe on the field in a lot of formations for the three safety look. But when they go to a more of a true nickel back type role, I think you see Colbert come on the field and Bobby kick over. If Nick Needham is playing better than Adrian Colbert is throughout camp, I think you see Bobby stay more in that safety spot and a Nick Needham or a Noah Igbinoghene come on the field and be that true nickel while Bobby stays out in the safety spot. I don't see Bobby getting kicked off the field. I just see him slotting around differently as a football player than based around who steps up more in the scenarios.
Yeah, I agree with you. And in this defensive package here, I mean, you're going to have five defensive backs out on the field. I mean, gosh, between 70 and 80% of the time. And you're going to have six defensive backs out on the field, if I had to estimate, between 30 and 40% of the time. So even if Bobby McCain in that scenario is your sixth defensive back, I'm still paying for Bobby McCain to be on this roster for 30 to 40% of plays. He'll be out on the field more than that, but just if the worst happens to him. What I like about this, when we are seven deep and possibly more at the defensive back spot, it eliminates the ability that at the end of the year, you're seeing players out there like Bakari Rambo, like RJ Stanford, like Nate Brooks, like Lyndon Stevens, these guys who just, It's maddening to see a second. It would be maddening to see a secondary that has Byron Jones and Xavier Howard at cornerback And then when you go to six defensive backs, you see one guy getting picked on all the time. Kind of that Jerry Wilson syndrome from back in 2000 during the Monday Night Miracle. So yeah, I like the way that this defense is looking on paper. And when you consider that for the season last year, the Dolphins were what, 32nd overall, 30th in points. I think I've got that correct. Then, you know, it really can't get much worse for a season. But it's nice to take those parts from last year, the Nick Needhams, the Vince Beagles, and carry them to the 2020 season as well.
It really is. And on top of that, one of the guys I just want to touch on real quick is Tay Hayes, because he's a guy you and I have talked about. We've talked about some of our shows this offseason as well. Tay Hayes is definitely a guy I expect to stick on this roster. He showed a lot of promise and upside last year. And, you know, we've had injury history with Xavier Howard. I love X. I hope he stays out of the field. I hope he is healthy and totally outplays his, what was it, I think an 82 Madden rating. God, you think PFF's bad. But yeah, this secondary is cool. And the thing I love most is how positionless this defense is. So, you know, we can sit there and beat the nickel or safety role with Bobby McCain to death, but at the end of the day, he's going to be out there as a football player playing different roles. And those are just, it's almost like the positions are loose terms to quantify somebody at this point, as opposed to definitive locks where the guy's in a box and it lets these players play to their strengths and helps them mask their weaknesses, which is something, God, our longtime listeners know, I've been beating to death for years.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it, that it is positionless. And that was such the frustration with these former Bengals jerk-offs, the Kevin Coyles and Matt Burks. And I mean, yeah, you have the same players lining up in the same spot every play. And the design of the defense is either you get to the quarterback and force him to make a legendarily bad pass, or you're going to have wide receivers running wide open on each play. So, yeah, so we've got eight defensive backs as locks here. We've got Xavier Howard, Byron Jones, Bobby McCain, Eric Rowe, rookies Noah Igbinoghene and Brandon Jones, Nick Needham, and Clayton Fedulum. Fedulum may not seem like a lock, but the Dolphins are going to pay him $3 million this season regardless. So you bet he's going to make the roster. But usually defensive backs, you keep 10 to 11 of them on your final 53-man roster. So that's going to be the interesting competition. And the fascinating one is going to be for the fifth and sixth cornerback spots between Cordrea Tankersley, who a lot of people have forgotten about, and for good reason, Tay Hayes, Ken Webster, and Ryan Lewis. You could see two of the four making it and two of the four getting cut. I also do see Adrian Colbert making the team as well as the ninth guy. And then you're going to have a battle for the 10th and 11th spot among those four cornerbacks. So, Paul, we've run through a lot here. Special teams is really straightforward. Jason Sanders, Matt Hawk, Blake Ferguson, I don't see any way that changes unless one of those three has a terrible camp. But yeah, we've run through a lot here, and we're going to be sure to run through a lot here in the upcoming months. And throughout the season, we're going to try to stick to the plan as far as reviewing each game that night, previewing each game with a guest, as well as Paul and I doing our own preview during the year. But Paul, it looks like we're going to do some live breakdowns here after the game, so to keep the timeline a little bit closer to the game, so it can be a little bit more raw.
Yes, I can't wait. I really enjoyed doing some of that live stuff this off season. So for our listeners out there, definitely make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. That's where we're gonna go live at, and you know, I think it helps us get the content out a little bit quicker to our listeners. And you know, thanks to everybody that's been listening this offseason. It's been a hell of a lot of fun. And God, it's nice to have it be interesting instead of the dopey slow mode that we used to have with, the Joe Philbot there. And yeah, I said Philbot.
Yeah, and that will do it for our breakdown of the Dolphins positional battles as we enter camp, as well as roster locks. You can follow Paul and I on Facebook, Twitter, Spreaker, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Brian Cat NFL on Twitter. Paul is Fanatic_pick. And if it's not on the right side and it's not on the left side, it is on the fin side. Solo D, take us home.
It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fin side. It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fin side. Listen, Dolphins fans across the land all tuning in to see what Brian Cat and Paul about to do again.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.